as it relates to post-school education and training. We appear before this committee to come and brief you on four reports that emanate from the work that has been assigned by the minister to the various
Sorry, Chair, we just lost the Deputy Minister.
Okay, have I been muted all the time, Chair? Hello?
Yeah, we lost you, Deputy Minister.
Yeah.
Okay, but
we lost you there when you were telling us that you are going to brief us on the
fourth industrial revolution.
No, the four reports.
Or the four reports.
Yeah.
Okay. So those four reports, of the first report is on the ministerial task team on Black academics. I think in the 2016-2017 budget speech, where the minister announced that a ministerial task team would be set up to look into and propose solutions to the obstacles of the production of South African Black academics. And following this announcement, the minister approved the appointment of the ministerial task team on the recruitment, retention, and progression of Black academics at South African universities. And this task team comprised representatives from higher education system and universities, Department of Science and Innovation, the Research Fund, National Research Foundation, and also our Department of Higher Education and Training. And its purpose was to carry out an investigation into the blockages that prevent effective recruitment, retention and progression in South African Black academics at universities in the country, but also to assess the effectiveness of initiatives that have been developed to address these and to make recommendations to the minister and the department on how these blockages can be decisively addressed. So the second report will be on the independent review of University of South Africa, and members would jog their memory back to June 2020, where the minister appointed a task team to conduct an independent review of UNISA, focusing on the strategic mandate and purpose of the university within the South African context. The third one is on the fourth industrial revolution, which was announced in 2019 by former Minister of Higher Education and Training, Dr. Naledi Pandor, when she appointed a task team on the implications of the fourth industrial revolution for post-school education and training. And the task team's mandate was to advise the minister and the department on how to respond to the challenges and opportunities posed by the fourth industrial revolution. And then the fourth one will be on the Ministerial Committee of Inquiry on the independent investigation into the business process, system and capacity of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Last year in May, the minister appointed the Ministerial Committee of Inquiry to conduct an independent investigation into the business process, systems and capacity of the NSFAS. And the scope of the investigation was to determine the root causes of the problems experienced with the rollout of the student-centered model at NSFAS and the implementation of the new bursary scheme from 2018. And this committee also had to make recommendations for future business process system policies and capacity necessary at NSFAS to administer student financial aid effectively. So we want to share these reports with the committee chair and the extensive progress update regarding this project that includes work done, some of the challenges we've encountered, and where the process is at the moment, and importantly, the recommendations made on the way forward. So let me allow the DG, who's been accompanied by several officials from our department, Dr. Nkosinathi Sishi, and who would also introduce the team, especially those members who would play a crucial role in the presentations and also the Q&A. And we'll be happy to engage and advise from members of the committee. If I can hand over to the DG, whip and or chair of the session. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. And we are quite excited as a possible committee to be dealing with all these reports, even if they give us a clear picture in terms of the progress that has been made thus far. DG Sishi?
Good morning, Whip and Chair, members of the Portfolio Committee, or Deputy Minister. Thank you very much, DM, for a very clear, you know, a set of remarks to usher in our presentation today. Whip, I'm not alone today. I'm with my colleagues from the department who are here to support me in this presentation. And they include the Deputy Director General, Dr. Thandi Lewin, particularly in the report on the recruitment, retention, and progression of Black South African academics. Dr. Lewin, particularly, he has expertise in this area, and I would like to draw her in sharing some of the insights that she has had working with this particular work. Her PhD is in the area as well, which also involved gender issues. I wish to also introduce Ms. Trudy van Wyk. Trudy is Chief Director responsible for the open learning system of the department. And at a point when we present on the, you know, implications of the fourth industrial revolution on post-school education and training, I would like to also draw some of her inputs into the conversation to enrich the deliberations of the portfolio committee. I think, Chairperson, the opening remarks by the Deputy Minister covers all of us in this regard, and we thank him for that. We have four reports to present, and these reports, firstly, I would like to start with the one on the implications of the fourth industrial revolution on post-school education and training, a report which was commissioned on the 29th of November 2019, as the Deputy Minister has indicated, at which then Professor Vilakazi, from University of Wits, was appointed as a chairperson to lead a team of 10, you know, experts that, work with her to ensure that an investigation is conducted on the capacity of the PSET system to do three key things. Firstly, to contribute or to establish how the PSET system sought to contribute to the fourth industrial revolution, especially in the area of research and innovation. Secondly, to provide and produce skills that are in line with the needs of the fourth industrial revolution, building the capacity, for functioning in this regard. And lastly, to embrace the affordances of the fourth industrial revolution. The minister also indicated that, you know, it's important that as we deal with these issues at the time, we also look into gaps where they exist, how the PSET system would be strengthened, and what are the new areas of interventions that would have emerged in the course of the investigation. I think it's important that right at the forefront, we indicate that this work also happened parallel to the work of the Presidential Commission on the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And the Presidential Commission in this area was tasked to come out with the country's overarching strategy on the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And therefore, the understanding was that once this work is done, it will feel and feed into the work of the Presidential Commission, which already had identified, you know, ecosystems, you know, for human capital development, starting from the, you know, the early childhood development, you know, right up to, you know, primary education, and you know, through to the world of work. Equally, these ecosystems will include, you know, the changing and you know, world of work. You know, industry initiatives. You know, SAQA and the regime of quality assurance bodies that are tasked to ensure that recognition of prior learning is in place, to ensure that you know, assessment is conducted with integrity, and that these quality assurance, you know, look after each sector. You know, the Council for Higher Education, you know, looking after the university, you know, sector, QCTO looking at the, you know, occupations areas, and UMALUSI looking at general education and training, you know, sector. All these are part of the ecosystems that were, you know, identified by the Presidential Commission, which further provided a systemic view on the area of, you know, Industry 4.0 or the Fourth Industrial Revolution, wherein the technology-enabled learning environment was cited to provide the pathways, you know, using data analytics, resource skills ecosystem with high fourth industrial teams that worked into this particular area. That the micro-credentialing was also identified as the key to accreditation and certification in the light of the fact that in respect of the how we see training and development currently, you will note that not all the programs for training, you know, are, you know, always subjected to a proper accreditation and certification processes. And that it is important for us to develop, you know, micro and ensure that micro programs, you know, also are subjected to this, so that it allows the majority of the working people to move around the national qualifications framework, and therefore could progress through and drive, you know, their career paths, you know, through the national qualifications framework. The portability of qualifications is also identified, you know, with the proposal to have stackable qualifications, you know, and particularly in this regard, you know, online learning, and at the point when we deal with issues around the University of South Africa as well, and later on in this presentation, I would like to bring in Ms. Trudy van Wyk to make comments around online learning and the initiatives of our department in response to these, this work that we are doing. I think the point there being that as much as this work has continued on the side, the department has not stopped to feed from the work of this, experts to increase the capacity of the department to drive change. We the teacher, lecturer, and reskilling initiatives, the curriculum relevance, competency, skills, the ecosystem agility and redesign, entrepreneurship, industry linkages and relationships are all seen as systemic issues that needed to be dealt with, and how this would have been done is also indicated in the slide to show that there is a this work. In the slide, we see, the three components, that looks into how the fourth industrial revolution is constituted, with the new business models being identified, the agility of competitors, new tools, virality and crowdsourcing, social marketing, demand side disruptions, global supply chains and disruptions, constituting the changing business models and government that are part of the areas, that the task team has looked into. The transformation of society, particularly in the area of the changing nature of work and jobs and purpose, has been looked into. Urban concentration, privacy and personal freedoms, changing patterns of ownership, being part of the component that deals with how society as a whole needs to be transformed so that it is aligned to the new world of unprecedented technological breakthrough of the Industry 4.0 or the fourth industrial revolution. The technology revolution continues. In as much as at the beginning of this work, big data, mobility and pervasive connectivity, blockchain, robotics, nanotechnology, 3D printing, genomics, were considered to be, major areas on which interfaces between these areas would have led to unprecedented, technological breakthrough. We continue to see new areas, and new materials, virtual realities. Virtual reality, robotics, mobility and connectivity, in this particular area. So the implications for the fourth industrial revolution in terms of the report for the PSET, sector is, proposed as follows. Firstly, that growth in new products and services, new tasks has to be generated by the adoption of new technologies. I think this is going to be a key area, at which, the system, particularly the PSET system, has got to look into. That the demand, not only for functional skills, but also for transferable skills, must be looked into. That composition of skills required to perform a job will change, will also be looked into. More short-term, flexible work, often via online work platforms, which is part of the work that we do with the development of the open learning system, is one of the recommendations, including the technology as a tool wherein data and information is the fuel. These are key areas that are raised in the report at which the PSET system is required to become far more agile. And this agility is required in the area of interdisciplinary engagements, flexible teaching and learning that is cited, the new skills required for new technologies, repurposing and reconfiguration of the curricula, the work that we're doing in the curricula towards the establishment of a focused institution, particularly in the TVET area, is one of the areas which it shows how the department seek to respond to these areas, the holistic programs, meaningful and relevant content and increased access being some of the issues that are there. The ministerial task team therefore has envisioned that there should be flexibility in respect of how and where students access learning opportunities. That a massive increase in short course skilling opportunities is required. That recognition of learning outside formal national qualification, as well as the responsiveness to the acceleration of pace of technological change, is seen to be one of the areas that the department, as well as all stakeholders, need to contribute to the broader overarching strategy of the country for the Industry 4.0. The MTT further state that a strong core of education and training programs needs to be looked into, at which wider and more pervasive application of work integrated learning is an important feature, including the modes and educational delivery that embraces the principles of open learning, combining building a strong initial education foundation with ongoing educational and skills acquisition opportunities. In this regard, you see the Department of Basic Education working seamlessly with the Department of Higher Education and Training, Science, Technology and Innovation Ministry in ensuring that we combine the building of a strong initial education foundation, particularly with the focus in this regard of early childhood development. And we are happy to see that ECD is now in the purview of the Department of Basic Education, so that there is seamlessness in the system right up to the point of the world of work. The accreditation systems should allow students to accumulate stackable micro-credentials. These are portable credentials that students can move around with within the national qualifications framework, accumulating these credentials wherever they go, and they get recognized to allow the students to move and progress in the system, instead of a series of programs they attend that says nothing, that do not help them in moving around the national qualifications framework. Emphasis is here on key generic skills, as well as the integrated delivery modes that needs to be looked into. The ministerial task team has also further identified dependencies and as well as enablers. In this regard, a new vision for the PSET system should be implemented in parallel with the developmental strategies as suggested by the ministerial task team in its recommendation. It is also the partnership and collaborations flexibility and integrated ecosystems, ongoing mobilization, reprioritization of funding, and ongoing human capital development that is indicated in this regard. The whole issue of digital inclusion is going to be key, you know, as we drive our, you know, programs to change the situation towards access, you know, to hardware, because in these areas, access to hardware, affordability of these, you know, issue of bandwidth, reliability of internet, information literacy, effective integration of ICT into teaching and learning, you know, access to applications and content are going to be the issues that needs to be looked into if we were to achieve, you know, the digital inclusion, which, you know, is key to driving the fourth industrial revolution. Provide ongoing and effective student support. I think we see, you know, with the NSFAS, you know, program at which just in the financial year 14-15, NSFAS budget was around 5.9 billion. You know, by 2018, that budget was 20 billion. In the last financial year, the NSFAS budget was 42 billion. Currently, NSFAS budget is, you know, 47 billion to indicate the work that has been done towards ensuring that an effective student support system is established, notwithstanding the progress that we would like to, you know, cite in this regard. You know that the minister has also appointed the ministerial trust team that looks into how do we ensure that we provide beyond NSFAS a comprehensive, you know, student funding system, you know, which is part of the recommendation of cabinet in this regard. The MTT has identified as part of the dependencies the issue of an ongoing and effective lecturer development initiatives, particularly in community education and training, wherein the baseline is very low, as you will see that, you know, the average qualification for lecturers in community education and training is around REQ V13, which is matric plus 3 years. Certainly, a lot of work needs to be done. But even in the university sector, where you might have a different situation, there is a need for us to engage, you know, lecturer development such that we are able to spread to areas, you know, that, you know, are relevant for driving the fourth industrial revolution, building micro-credentialing systems and developing systemic local and regional approaches in that regard. Chairperson, I submit that as the report, you know, of the task team. With your permission, I may proceed, or with your guidance, maybe also look into the, you know, proceed with the rest of other presentations. But I stand guided by you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sishi. DG, we would request that we proceed with other presentations, and we'll then, when we engage, we will engage holistically.
Thank you, Chair. I'm trying, as I present, to really try to be brief. You know, the reports are quite extensive, but if I'm overly, concise, I will be guided in that regard. Herein, Chairperson, with your permission, I present the ministerial task team work on the investigation into the blockages that are associated with the recruitment, retention, and progression of Black South African academics in South African University. Work that has taken time since it was announced in the financial year 2016-17 budget speech, at which the ministerial task team would be established to look into and propose solution to obstacles to the production of South African Black academics. Subsequent to the announcement at the budget speech, the minister also approved the appointment of the task team in this regard. And, you know, the representatives in the task team were drawn from higher education system, from our universities, DSI, the NRF, and as well as the Department of Higher Education. We tried to make sure that there's a strong representativity of these sectors that are affected by the focus of the mandate of the ministerial task team, the main purpose of which was to carry out an investigation into blockages that prevent effective recruitment, retention, and progression of South African Black academics at universities in our country. Chair, the recommendations are quite, you know, extensive. There are 20 of them, and I'm not going to get into all of them in details, but it is very important just to cite by a few of these recommendations that are crucial, but also to take note of the fact that parallel to this report being produced from the draft stages, the interactions that have taken place between the ministerial task team and the department, a lot of work has been done to address some of these issues, ensuring that in terms of the first recommendation, an ambitious but achievable target are set for the ideal overall postgraduate enrollment share in the public university system. I think in the National Development Plan, there are targets that are there to stretch the system towards ensuring that we broaden access to the PSET system, particularly in the areas, where scarce skills, needs to be produced. The student funding for postgraduate students must be enhanced to attract high achieving students. And this is the second recommendation that requires a fit for purpose financial packages. In this regard, I've made a suggestion of how we are trying to, you know, deal with the issues around the missing middle. How we're dealing, for example, right now we would like to really investigate a series of packages of offerings, you know, by government departments to the missing middle, so that South Africa can actually see what is it that we are doing beyond the NSFAS to ensure that we broaden, you know, the packages of support that is provided to our students. The third recommendation is about the sustainable attention that needs to be paid to improving undergraduate and postgraduate student success, going through to the sixth recommendation on working towards the National Development Plan goal of 75% of academic staff at universities holding doctorates. And recommendation seven, about supporting programs that must be available to comprise sustainable programmatic activities that are nuanced to address specific and real, you know, needs of new academics generally. Recommendation eight is about a concerted effort that should be made to identify these academics in the system, especially to attract young academics into the academy. You know, the workload model that enable early career academics to develop as teachers and researchers that must be implemented is welcome. Recommendation 9. 11, perhaps the most important recommendation to be made in this report is arguable the need to tackle institutional and individual racism and sexism in direct and visible ways, including thorough penalizing of perpetrators, but also in ways that assist the building of institutional cultures that embraces diversity, that are anti-racist and anti-sexist. I think it is very clear in terms of recommendation 11 that one of the issues that have been identified that prevents the flowing in the academy of young academics, especially women and those in that are not well represented in the academy, is actually attributed to racist and sexist tendencies that are not aligned to the values of our constitution. This means, therefore, moving from hoping that this will happen naturally or to actually putting measures in place to ensure it happens is important. Universities are urged to interrogate how institutional cultures and traditional practices may be created, alienating institutional cultures and traditional practices to ensuring that a proactive measures in are put in place to address this. University leadership is urged, as well as management, to lead in this regard, and must receive training in how we ensure that this is achieved. We consider this an important recommendation, and I think a lot of work, as you see in the four reports we are presenting today, is being done to making sure that we address this, but it requires a strong social compact that allows our social partners to take part in the work that we do to rid the system of the scourges of racism and sexism. Recommendation 12 is about a system-wide appraisal of the conditions of service of lecturers and junior lecturers, including the levels of remuneration across the university system, that needs to be undertaken with a view to improving conditions of service where necessary, so that the best young graduates can be attracted to an academic career. And I think this is crucial. The mandate of the National University Transformation Oversight Committee needs to be expanded where necessary to enable it to take forward the actions required of it in this report, and that it must be adequately and effectively resourced to enable this important National University Transformation Oversight Committee to drive change in respect of the recommendations that are made. Chairperson, the MTT further recommends, as we conclude, that the NRF rating system and its funding model needs to be reviewed in line with the national priorities and the transformation agenda of the country, which means, therefore, a refocus of the NRF strategy that prioritizes all higher education institutions and Black South Africans in particular. That the NRF also should put in place strategies of building capacity and expertise at historically disadvantaged universities in the areas of science, technology, and innovation. As we conclude this report, Chair, we look at recommendation 18, 9, and 19. But recommendation 20 concludes by citing the importance of a strong monitoring and evaluation processes that must be implemented by the Department of Higher Education and Training. I'm happy to report, Chair, that in this regard, we have appointed a chief director, who's going to oversee this area, which strengthens the capacity of the department in this regard, and to ensure that we determine whether the range of staff capacity development programs are having the desired transformation impact in the system, as well as to evaluate the system in respect of ensuring the reshaping of programs, that are provided in that regard. DHET has not been spared by the recommendations, as the MTT recommends that it closely ensures that it works with other government departments, especially establishes a strong synergy with DSI in ensuring that as part of a concerted government program, including the work of our entities, such as the DOL and the Employment and Gender Commission, we ensure that our universities implement transformation plans that are in place. Plans are there, but the ministerial task team is urging the Department of Higher Education and Training in particular to ensure that those plans are implemented, and that to empower the department, it will help to work closer with the, particularly the Employment and Gender Commission in this regard. The synthesis report will inform the department's memorandum to cabinet, which will, in addition to the study recommendations, propose specific interventions and attendant resources towards addressing the challenges identified in this regard. Chairperson, I think notwithstanding the fact that we see the root of this report being towards cabinet, but we also feel that it will also serve our purpose to conduct further participation by the sector, the PSET sector, in adding their comments into the report before it is finalized, because these are far-reaching comments which will help us drive a transformation. The department will work with the Department of Science and Technology and Innovation to prepare a cabinet memo jointly, as this work will have to include other recent studies that have been conducted parallel to this report, Chairperson. And I wish to cite a study that has been conducted in building a cadre of emerging scholars for higher education in South Africa, which was released in 2018, undertaken by Stellenbosch University, CREST, as well as a study on retention, completion, and progress rates of South African postgraduate students that was also conducted by CREST. This work will be consolidated so that we cross-reference the recommendations that are made with the recommendations of the MTT as we present this report to Cabinet. I submit the report, Chairperson. With your permission, if you allow me, I move to the last but one report on the NSFAS Ministerial Committee of Inquiry, a report, Chair, which I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, because I think by the time this report was commissioned, a lot of work has been done, which I think you have seen from a time when NSFAS at the time of the commission of this report was under administration, to a point now where the Auditor General reports that the audit outcomes of NSFAS have drastically improved to unqualified the audit opinion of the last audit by the Auditor General. We continue to drive Operation Clean Audit to affect not only the department, but all our entities, including NSFAS. The minister at the time when he appointed this investigation, urged them to conduct this investigation into business processes of NSFAS, looking into systems and capacity of NSFAS, establishing, that the MCI was announced in Government Gazette accordingly, and the scope of the work included the determination of the root causes of the problems experienced with the rollout of the student-centered model at NSFAS, including recommendations to future business processes. Quite clearly, we have not reached the point at which we need to. There are still administrative inefficiencies at NSFAS, but it is clear to us that interventions that have been made continue to improve NSFAS. We have to ensure that this report, as we present it, continues to inform the work that we do to ensure that that mandate and scope that was given to it is dealt with. The organizational development of NSFAS was the focus, and the report covers the issues that were key to ensuring the organizational development of NSFAS, as well as the operational improvements that will ensure a more effective, conduct of the business, including the reconfiguration or replacement of the enterprise management systems, where NSFAS must review processes for student, funding appeals that must continuously review and improve data instruments used to determine financial eligibility of applicants, as well as to ensure that further development and improvement of systems are aimed at protecting students and NSFAS against fraud and abuse of funds, mainly through improved systems for identified confirmation. I think Dr. Lewin will also make reference to some of the recent interventions to improve the administrative systems at NSFAS by looking at ICT, as a lever to actually drive change towards an effective administration in the entity. Relationships with the post-school education and training institutions needs to be stronger. Significantly in this regard, we wish to cite the progress gains achieved during administration, the period of administration in systems management, financial controls, and reporting, as well as reconsideration of value of having a more sustainable presence of staff being physically located at institutions, regional levels throughout the country so that they are accessible to institutions. I think we are slow in this regard, and we have to move faster in ensuring that this is achieved. I think the portfolio committee at some point have made it very clear to us that this area needs to continue to improve, and we are focused in this, and we wish to commit ourselves in that regard. The minister and the department, are urged to make sure that national policy environment is stabilized, that the acceleration of the process of developing regulations that are to guide the operation and implementation of the state bursary system are developed. And I think we've seen this year a very smooth process of consultation with the NSFAS guidelines, which unfortunately was delayed right at the end, because that process needed to be aligned with the availability of the funding of the shortfall in the NSFAS budget. But otherwise, this process has moved quite smoothly, and we trust that we've learned lessons from it, and going forward, we will improve on the consultation process in this regard and guide institutions so that the opening of a new academic calendar by institution is not disrupted by lack of guidance in this regard. The report urged that the minister and the department consider the possible or the possibility of governance and operational benefits of physically relocating the main office of NSFAS and integrating this office with the CAS. And that also, we need to investigate the possibility of separating NSFAS core functions, particularly in the three areas of supporting students to successfully complete their studies, disbursement of funds to students, as well as the ensuring that the disbursement function is managed by a specialist IT entity. That the minister consider the possibility or the possible governance and operational benefits of physically relocating the institutions as indicated before, and investigating the possibility of separating NSFAS in the three areas. The way forward that is proposed is that the board of NSFAS report regularly on progress made against the recommendations, and that all these recommendations pertaining to the department are addressed through a policy review process, which I'm happy to indicate that it is currently underway. Chairperson, the organizational development of NSFAS is specifically recommended, and here we provide some kind of progress, just to assist the portfolio committee to actually see that the work has been done in some of these areas as well. You know, Chair, I submit the NSFAS MTT report and conclude my presentation with the UNISA, you know, MTT report, a report that the minister, commissioned, so that we conduct of an independent review of UNISA is focused on a strategic mandate, on its strategic mandate and purpose of this giant institution that is one of the largest in the world. And in the report, the minister is quoted to have said that UNISA is too big to fail. And therefore, turning around this institution is key to us. And therefore, it would be clear why the minister wanted an investigation into this. But a lot of work has been done since then, including the appointment of a female vice, a chancellor who's continuing to turn things around in that institution. And clearly the institution is heading the right direction. But it's very important that we pay attention to this report, which despite its mandate, at the time that the MTT conducted its work, it was confronted with a number of operational issues that were falling outside of its mandate. And at some point it came back to the department to seek fresh mandates because of the difficulties that were there in the institution. I think gradually we see stability emerging, but it requires us that we pay attention to this report, which has been crafted by some of the best academics and people who are highly esteemed in the academy. The MTT submitted the report to the department on the 30th of August last year. And the mandate in terms of the findings and recommendations is considered to remain appropriate and relevant, as it is essential for our country to continue to drive this flagship open distance e-learning institution that is focused on excellence in e-learning, lifelong learning provision, and acting as a national resource for ODEL and the higher education system in South Africa. The importance of UNISA is acknowledged right there. UNISA, in terms of the findings of this report, has failed to make adequate provision for a dramatic change in the profile of the student body. That this university has failed, despite the slow progress we see, to ensure that enrollment targets were unrealistic and that in some cases even irresponsible, and considering the lack of institutions' capacity. It therefore admits more students than it can support, thus prioritizing access over success. And I think these are administrative issues which are cited in the recommendations. Although UNISA's multiple strategies are overall valid, they do not match up to the demands of the current environment, nor indeed are they as ambitious as they could be. That UNISA should be a national center of excellence, and that it could and it should be a major presence in the open education resource movement nationally and internationally. That that there are complex metrics of global, national, and international dynamics that impacts on its mission, strategy and operations. Whereas UNISA had a clear mandate from its young days, it is very clear to us that in the recent past, UNISA have had to really look into whether its mandate is being remedial or it continues strictly to, you know, follow the original mandate. Given the impact of the drivers, the ministerial task team is of the view, Chairperson, that every aspect of higher education in South Africa needs to be revised and higher education policies must be re-examined. And as such, a National Commission on Higher Education is recommended to address this issue. I think it's an important recommendation, and UNISA also plays a significant role in teacher education. And I think this is an important recommendation by the MTT to say that UNISA accounts for over 20% of all UNISA enrollments. Its College of Education is the largest teacher education institution in Africa, providing training over 50% of all qualified teachers in the country. Despite this, there is no discernible strategic priority given to teacher education. And the ministerial task team recommends that the minister should urge UNISA to begin to position itself as a national center of excellence for teacher development. Obviously, this recommendation, sits in the area of turning around not only higher education, but all education, including basic education in the country. And it's a very important recommendation in this regard. And from the governance point of view, the ministerial task team report concludes that the council is the cause of the problems of the university based on a number of observations, which include the fact that the council has dismally failed UNISA, and as it has not equipped itself or the management committee with a range of skills and competences that are necessary to provide the appropriate strategic guidance and direction to a modern, you know, ODEL institution for the 21st century. That the council, in terms of the current strategy that it has approved, does not encompass all aspects of a modern ODEL institution, and it fails to build on the strengths and address the weaknesses of the institution, such as the dysfunctional and outdated information and communications technology infrastructure. That the council has not demonstrated the knowledge, skills, and expertise to guide and direct the production of a comprehensive strategic plan for a modern ODEL institution in the 21st century. That the council has failed to ensure that the serious and strategic risks identified in the risk register for 2013 to 2015 have been given an attention that it deserves. A set of strong, findings relating to governance are made, including the need for further urgent investigation by a body with a forensic expertise in respect of some of the recommendations that are made. Chairperson, as I conclude, based on the evidence presented by the MTT in terms of this report, UNISA suffers chronic management failures, and that the performance of departments such as supply chain management at UNISA, human resource management, compliance functions, as well as finance are seriously compromised, and the institution failed the university, putting the entire institution in jeopardy. A simultaneously failure of multiple management system points to deficiencies at leadership level, as well as a gross neglect of consequence management. Therefore, in the respect of the above, the MTT recommends that the minister should issue a directive on account of a reasonable belief that the UNISA Council is involved in financial impropriety, otherwise mismanaged, is unable to perform its functions effectively. That the minister should dissolve the council and appoint the administrator to whom the Vice Chancellor should account. In addition, that the Minister should appoint a multidisciplinary team of management experts, that a new council be reconstituted with a revised set of rules and regulations in respect of the composition and appointment of the new council members. The report concludes by providing that the minister needs to consider this report, and the minister is considering this report, and also the minister is in the process of consultation with the university council, so that also council has had a formal engagement with this report, taking into account that notwithstanding that the report is reportedly has leaked previously, but formally the minister is committed to ensuring that consultation with council is conducted, and therefore we present this report to the committee cautiously, and knowing that this can also become a public issue prior to us having finalized engaging the council, as well as the fact that the minister also wishes to take into confidence his cabinet colleagues in looking at some of the issues that are recommended in the report. We submit the four reports, Chairperson, and thanking you and the Deputy Minister for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG Sishi. Thank you very much to Honorable Mahlatsi as well for holding your fort, and good morning to all colleagues. If we could stop sharing the screen. Okay, thank you. And then if I could kindly request Anela that I be made a co-host as well on my side on this device. Thank you. Thank you very much, colleagues, once again for availing yourselves this morning. And apologies that I could not be with yourselves. I could not start the meeting with you. And again, I'd like to thank and show my gratitude to Honorable Mahlatsi for holding the fort. Colleagues, we've now received the four presentations from, one presentation inculcating four, the work of four ministerial task teams. I'd like to note if there are members who would like to engage on what has been presented to us. Okay, I'm also, as the hands went up, I was reminded, colleagues, that we have been joined by Dr. Ntombi Khumalo from the Democratic Alliance, who and Dr. Lotriette has now left the committee. Dr. Khumalo, welcome to the Portfolio Committee. We're really happy to have you on board. This is a team of very vibrant young people, including Honorable Boshoff, who's also very young at heart. So we look forward to working with you and committing ourselves to doing very robust oversight on the two departments that we are responsible for, which is higher education and training, as well as the Department of Science and Innovation. And we wish you all the best in your tenure with us in this portfolio committee. Having said that, Dr. Khumalo, you were the first to raise your hand, so I will hand over to yourself, followed by Honorable King and then Honorable Sibiya. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. Thank you to the presenters for the presentation. I also want to just express gratitude for the warm welcome. I certainly look forward to working in this portfolio, considering my experience and all of that. So I look forward to contributing very constructively towards ensuring that the committee can really ultimately fulfill significant useful oversight over the two departments. Again, thank you to the departments for the presentations. They are much appreciated. I think I just want to, I don't know, Chair, if there's any order or should we just go ahead and give inputs and questions to, you know, in whatever order, or should we go on the order that the presentations were made?
No, you may go ahead in whichever format you choose. Thank you.
Awesome. So I'll start with the ministerial task team on recruitment, retention, and progression of Black academics. We saw recommendations. I just want to express a concern, Chairperson, around, you know, the sharing of the full report. I think it's very important for us, as much as it's important for us to see the recommendations, I think it's also very important for us to see the work process that led to those recommendations in terms of what methodology was used. I'm very curious to find out the methodology that was used to investigate you know, these various topics by the various ministerial task teams. So I would like clarity on that. And I think that also helps us to engage even better with the content that is presented to us. But looking at recommendation number 8, it's very welcome and it makes sense. And while there's perhaps just to say that, you know, there's various universities doing a good job, such as UJ, excuse my bias as I am an ex-employee there, but of course, and other universities. I am, however, concerned that there is an unspoken part to it, in that what does the MTT recommend in as far as non-participation is concerned by certain academic? I think in my experience as well, and exposure in the academic arena, that there are lecturers who have no aspirations to obtain PhDs, for example, for simple reasons related to their path plans or career projections, so to speak. So I'm quite curious around how we deal with that, because you have lectures, for example, in the previous Medusa, Sofako Makgato at the moment it's called, who have been lecturing there. I think you remember a few years, some colleagues will know that there were lecturers who were contributing significantly and producing really well-qualified health professionals. However, they had to be let go because they weren't, you know, getting their PhDs, or they were not interested in that field. And in that case, experience was neglected and basically rendered, you know, kind of useless, if I may use that word. Perhaps there is a better word I could use. But I think it raises a concern to say, what is the department doing? What's the thought process around consideration of academics whose career paths and progressions aren't necessarily to land up and end up in academia, which would not necessarily make a lot of sense for them to do PhDs. It does make sense. I know, for example, certain universities would say you couldn't lecture about 5 or 8 years ago, you couldn't lecture if you didn't have a master's. And while this is admirable to encourage people to get PhDs because that advances the country, ultimately, it advances the science, what we know, improvements of various professions throughout the country that we have. But I just want to raise that particular thing and understand what the thought process is around non-participation. Do we really just render people whose, you know, paths aren't involving necessarily obtaining a PhD, you know, quite, you know, like kick them out of the system as academics? Or what do we do in those instances? I also want to find out what will be the mechanism to hold universities to account. And in instances where universities have fulfilled their part in as far as visa recommendations are concerned, by supporting you know, the academics to ensure that they can obtain their PhDs and offering all the necessary support, what level of support and understanding would the university be afforded in instances of non-compliance, willingness, or non-participation by some academics? I think that's something very important to consider, because we might say universities need to do this, need to do that, but we must also understand the ecosystem. It's not just the university itself that needs to achieve this. It involves the academics themselves. It involves resources and all of that. So I'm quite curious around the support to universities, and also how, you know, compliance or non-compliance rather, non-willingness and non-participation will be handled, or what the thought process is from the MTT. Recommendation 9 and 10, while I completely understand the rationale and thought process of these recommendations, it's always important to consider the flip side of the actions. Again, what would it mean for those in academia who have placed teaching and learning above research as their performance areas a focus, you know. I know, for example, various institutions will ask you lecture and you'll do a certain amount of research, but that will be a performance agreement that you make, you know, with your manager or your HOD or your dean, ultimately, in as far as where your focus area will be. And with those whose focus areas would be teaching and learning, I just want to understand, would that now require universities to amend their performance management policies? I just want to get clarity around that. Or is this rather suggesting that the teaching and learning versus the research should be at a 50-50% weight? So just clarity there, because I also think, again, in this instance, career pathing is very important to consider while we do make these recommendations. While these recommendations make a lot of sense, and for the advancement of what it is we're trying to do, I also think there are certain aspects that we perhaps are not seeing from the presentation. Hence, again, it brings me back to, it would be lovely to see the work process that led here, the methodology, seeing the accounts of the various you know, steps taken to arrive at these recommendations. And I do think, you know, we're not afforded, you know, complete exposure to the process, and, you know, recommendations need to bring something for us to, in order to understand how they got there. And just looking at recommendation number 11, Chairperson, with all due respect, I don't think this is anything new. I think this is something we've all known. And what rings most in my head when I look at this recommendation is really thinking, doing the same thing, saying we'll do the same thing over and over and expecting that we'll get a different result. I think we all know that whilst issues of racism and sexism can be institutional, it is quite more an individual, a sickness of an individual nature rather. It's an indoctrination of individuals from different backgrounds or whatever influences that they might have had. So I do strongly feel that this has been a place for in place for many years in many of the universities. I'll speak of the 26 universities in the country. I can put my head on the block. 70% of them have transformation office, if not all of them, pushing agendas, running various workshops, et cetera, around diversity, racism, sexism, and many other issues around transformation. However, do people continue to experience racism, sexism in those places? They do. And this is also supported in this presentation too, if you look at observation 10, where we are actually told that these are observations that are made in these institutions. And I really think, so merely just saying this is what needs to happen, I don't think is an action. I think we need action steps as recommendations that will actually result in something happening, as opposed to us saying, well, we need transformation, we need a transformation office. But we need to be looking, I'm hoping that the MTT can perhaps shed light in terms of assessing the work and the impact of these transformation offices and departments that exist in these various institutions. You know, it calls for a different manner to reinforce the message, as opposed to saying, you know, we need to do that. I strongly feel that. A case in example, for example, Chairperson, could be Sefako Magatu University. I mean, we know the story around the VC. I don't want us to discuss the merits around that, but I think those who know, this is a classic example of what it is I'm trying to communicate. That university has transformation and whatever. The VC has been involved in issues related to, you know, patriarchy, sexism, or, you know, all of that. But, you know, I think it's how we deal with it. The impact of those offices and how seriously we take these issues is what's going to result in to anything different. You know, I've been in academia for 8 years lecturing, and I can tell you there is transformation office does workshops, it does all of this. And I think this issue really goes beyond just setting up a transformation office or a committee within a university to deal with racism and whatever, because the problem is much deeper. Are there consequences when situations like this happen in these institutions? Has there been an analysis of that happening so that people, in fact, can begin to change their behaviors because there are consequences? I mean, I'll take it just to general society. There aren't really many consequences. So I think for us to just take it from the top is not going to take us far very quickly, which is what we do need. Can I also ask for observation 12 to be elaborated on? in the sense of alluding to which constituents, which constitutes this observation, what exactly led to that observation, and the recommendation, is it suggesting that conditions will of services for academics are not standard? I just want to understand the conditions of service here, where they say first time, you know, academics have different work conditions as opposed to those who have worked long. I just want to understand there, you know, are there universities that actually have different, I'm not aware of, and I'm curious, and it would be lovely to know which universities those are in order we can also do oversight and understand what the rationale is around there. So, you know, which institutions are these that have different working conditions? Because that would be an HR or labor, you know, issue that would be a very huge concern. So I would be quite curious to find that out. Is recommendation 15 not a standard practice currently? I'm also curious to find out. Perhaps, of course, I haven't been or known all 26 universities intimately. So I would like to understand whether there is no monitoring at certain universities of the EE targets at higher education institutions, which is something I'm really, I know certain institutions have that, and there's monitoring and there's compliance, and there's even, you know, reward system of some sort, so to speak, in terms of them achieving their EE targets. So looking at recommendation 15 kind of gives me an idea that it seems that other universities might not be monitoring that or paying attention to that. So if we could just get an idea as to where, why. Whilst I have an appreciation for recommendation 17, Chairperson, I'm concerned that it does not address the quality aspect in reference to work performed. So changing the targets for NRF to suit the fact that we want to reach certain numbers, et cetera, is you know something I think that also needs to consider the quality of the work as opposed to the quantity. You know, the number of research articles that, you know, an individual would actually, you know, produce. Are we looking here at reducing the number, for example, to get an NRF rating? Are we looking at rather taking it, say, for example, from 5 articles or publications to 2 in order to reach the numbers that we want to reach? I just want clarity there, because things like where the article is published also count, you know, what sort of journal, is it, you know, just national, international, et cetera, all of that. Are we looking at NRF having to amend those, you know, requirements? I just want to understand what we're trying to do with that recommendation, and as far as NRF ratings are concerned. I also would like to find out what have been the gains of actually formulating the team, or rather as a result of the team. I've heard that progress has been made, but I'm not picking up exactly what over and above just the recommendations that are being made. I would like to perhaps find out the key takeaways in terms of the significance and impactful points that have been brought about, these findings and the recommendations. I'm also quite worried, Chair, that there are a lot of recommendations, a lot of which make sense, a lot of which could progress the agenda of the various topics that were looked at. I'm very concerned that there aren't timeframes, though. You know, I think anything that we do that doesn't have a timeframe to it really doesn't, you know, become helpful. I think if we understand that there needs to be this happening by this, we recommend that this happens by when, in order so that, you know, our target by 2026 could be this. And, you know, I think then it also allows us as a committee to be able to do effective oversight, as opposed to saying, oh yeah, great work, great recommendations, but what happens with that? How do we hold the departments accountable? How do we hold universities accountable to actually doing and executing these recommendations? In what time frames do we expect them to? And I'm not seeing that come across in any of the reports. So I felt maybe I needed to just raise that. I also have here, I guess this applies again on all the reports, the methodology used to investigate the various topics will really assist us, our understanding as well. And I think there will be follow-up questions once you understand what methodology was used to bring about these recommendations. I think logically in any investigation or in any research, you know, there needs to be, you know, this is the method we used, this is what we found, this is how we attained the information that we found, and these are the recommendations. And it really just assists us as the recipients of the information to understand the thought process, the work process, and be able to link, oh, this recommendation actually makes sense, or this finding is actually as a result of, you know, 50% of the universities, you know, showing that they're not doing 1, 2, 3 as opposed to 2 universities. So it really needs to make sense to us for us to interrogate constructively with the intent for improvement. And looking at the Ministerial Committee Inquiry presentation on independent investigation to NSFAS, I think just looking at the high level findings, I'm not sure that we're getting the sufficient information that we need. If you look at the HR aspect of it, I think it's a huge concern to a person around missing HR documents. What are these documents? And what happened? Have they just disappeared? Or is there a lack of reluctance to release these HR documents, the implications and the consequences? I would be curious as well, especially going on, I mean, HR documents are so important to one's livelihood as well, not just the department, but the individuals themselves. And I'm quite curious to find out the details around that, because I think it's not giving us much information by just saying HR documents were not accessible and those that were accessed had complied in terms of the HR processes. But, you know, that would not be helpful in this instance, because we would then want to know about the documents that weren't found. Looking at corporate governance failures, given the findings related to OD segment or organizational development in any institution segment of the department, has a skills audit perhaps been conducted in the division by the MTT to assess possible explanation of these findings, or are the corporate governance findings simply due to negligent or deliberate intentions for the benefit or accommodation of some within the NFSAs? I'm just very curious around that. Or is there lack of skills? I don't see recommendations that speak to capacitating the office more, and I see a lot around the IT incapacitation. I don't see, you know, I have seen a recommendation that relates to the IT and improving or capacitating it, but I haven't seen anything around corporate governance and how, you know, what the recommendation is to talk to that particular shortfall. So I also picked up that positions were created and appointments were made irregularly. There's with any organization, there's a process to, you know, creating positions, and there's recruitment processes. I would like to know where the mandate for these positions perhaps came from. I think it's very important for us to understand those sort of dynamics. Also that we don't make incorrect assumptions, that we actually make informed views and observations about the situation at NFSAS. So I think if we can get a clarity around, you know, how these positions were created based on what within the organization, I'm sure the MTT would know that, having conducted this investigation. So if we can just get an answer around that. The total disregard of our legislations also is a very, very worrisome observation that I've taken from this report. Legislation guides the governance, how we govern, and in this case have been completely disregarded. I want to find out who has been held accountable and what sort of sanctions have been imposed, considering the timeframe at which this report was finished. It's probably over a year, at least over a year and a half. I'd like to understand who's been held accountable and what sanctions have been imposed or handed down, so to speak. Looking at the findings, Chairperson, it sure comes at no surprise that NFSAS was literally basically a law unto itself. I think this report fell a little short of just simply saying that. No oversight over governance, Yes.
I just would like to remind you that there are still members who would also like to raise their questions, with all due respect, but I don't know if you could perhaps allow, I'm not sure how, because I think we, yeah, it's been some time now. I don't, I really try not to cut members off at all because, you know, we have a responsibility to fulfill to make sure that we represent our constituencies, but I also need to be cognizant of time and the fact that there are other members who'd also like to make their contributions. So perhaps if you could maybe allow for following members to make their contributions, and if by any chance you're not covered, I could come back to you.
Thanks, Jim.
Okay, thank you so much. Honorable King?
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Chair, let me just note that I'm a bit disappointed that we received most of the reports a bit late, and it would have been helpful if we actually had the actual MTT reports. And also concern that I would like to raise is that we're not doing any of these reports any justice if we are going to combine discussions on all of them. It would have been better if we could have had discussions on each of them on each separate day. So I just wanted to raise that, Chairperson. My first one will be on the 4IR report. When we look at 4IR, it's important to consider the infrastructure when it comes to the ICT systems and connectivity. So I would like to know how far are we how far have we come to do an assessment on all institutions of higher learning on how effective they can be in terms of rolling out 4IR at institutions, considering the infrastructure challenges that they might have regarding ICT and data connectivity. Since the release of the MTT's report on 4IR, how far are discussions with Treasury to ensure sustainable funding towards research and development beyond 0.86%, which they would like to be at 1.5% by 2030. So how far are we in reaching that expenditure spend on research and development? We recently did an oversight at the Saul Plaatje University. And during that oversight, it was highlighted the concern that they have that they're not getting enough students from basic education sector with regards to STEM subjects. So I would like to know what discussions and deliberations were there with the Department of Basic Education to ensure that there is proper collaboration and to ensure that the curriculum is updated with the link to the universities of higher learning to absorb those students who actually have STEM subjects. A perfect example would be the UCT online school, which actually filled that gap to ensure that at the end of the day, they actually groom their own learners towards a career path into UCT, especially when it comes to the STEM subjects. And have we looked at maybe rolling that program out to other institutions as well to consider also setting up their own online schooling to bridge that gap between universities and the basic education? Then can we get an understanding of the outcomes of deliberation between the basic education and higher education to ensure that there are curricular linkages for future careers in 4IR growth? Why to date has NEFSA funding not been streamlined to ensure funding is geared towards courses that will foster technological economic development in the STEM career fields? Collaboration between universities and TVET colleges is important to foster greater development of research and development for IR progress. Has an assessment or research being conducted on the impact of cross-cutting collaboration between universities and TVET colleges on curricular development and linkages and infrastructure sharing? On the MTT report with on the Black academics, the National University Transformation Committee was established in 2013, and I see the report is constantly highlighting this committee. I would just like to know, what is the core mandate of the National University Transformation Committee, and how is it linking in with the research of the Human Science Research Council? In 2017, the committee was changed, So I would just like to know, the 10-member committee, is it still consisting of Dr. André Keats, Dr. Tom, Professor Christine Weinberg, Professor Crane Sodin, Professor Pamela Maseku, Professor Kopana Patele, Professor Reed Sitole, Professor Sebenzile Matsebula, Fundisile Mzimande Zola Sopeteta? If those are still the committee members, and if there's been any changes to this committee, can we be updated exactly on who the new committee members of the Transformation Committee for Universities are? Also, have each university set up proper KPIs to ensure the transformation is effective at the various institutions? And if we can just get an update from each university, and also when it comes to the senior academic level and staff level, how transformation is effective in terms of the demographics of the various areas. When it comes to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, I know this was the first report that dealt with just the functionality of NESA and not specifically on the sustainability of the fund for future growth. So since 2017, why was the NEFSA Act not amended to incorporate the fee-free higher education policy, given that the Auditor General would constantly highlight the legislative mandate that is not adhered to and basically the guidelines, which is not properly consulted, which we saw at least this year, it actually did happen. ICT remains a challenge to ensure the smooth distribution and appeal processes. We've seen recently that it couldn't even have the capacity to handle the application process, and most of the time the system was down, which created much frustration. We also know that this report comes a bit late because most of the stuff with the new board has been implemented and action steps were given to us to highlight how this will be done. But to date, I would like to know, was there a proper assessment done on the ICT infrastructure of NEFSA to ensure the smooth running of the system? And really, is the student center model being very effective? And should we not then also, if we look at the student center model, disperse NEFSA back into institutions of higher learning for ease of reference, ease of access when students have challenges? The last one will then be on the UNISA MTT report. I agree totally with most of the recommendations that was made. We are seeing some progress taking place at UNISA, but I think the biggest concern was raised during the pandemic with lockdown, where everyone was looking at UNISA as a benchmark to ensure that in the long run, they can give us a blueprint on how to do online and distance education. And we found NEFSA to be lacking in that regard, which clearly indicated that there were serious challenges with the management of NEFSA and also concerns raised with the council of NEFSA. So we should actually really consider reviewing the council composition of UNISA and make sure that at the end of the day, we actually give a proper report or bring them before the parliamentary committee for a proper discussion on what is going on at UNISA. Because we recently received reports, I recently received reports from some academics at UNISA who wanted to remain anonymous, that raised concern on the quality of the assessments, and that at the end of the day, the degree that most university students from UNISA will not have a credible degree because the assessment quality of standards have become so low. It has become a benchmark to push students through in order to look at the proper quality to give proper students for the market out there. Chairperson, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable King. Honorable Sibiya.
And thanks, Chairperson. Thanks for all for the presentation from the DG. Chairperson, I would like to welcome Honorable Khumalo to our Portfolio Committee. Chair, on the issue of ministerial committee, I would like to know how long was the extension which was given to them, and what were the, was the financial implications after that extension? And did the ministerial task team of inquiry make findings related to the limitations of the current NSFAS Act? And when will the report be published for public consumption? Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibiya. Honorable Makesi. Me Carabella Makesi.
Thank you, Chair.
There we go.
Yes, okay. Good morning to everyone.
Morning, ma'am. Your sound is very low.
Oh, okay. Is it better now?
Let's try once more.
Okay. How is it now? Is it better? Mm-hmm.
It's still okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Is it fine?
It's low, but it's fine. We can hear you.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to just try to speak a little bit louder. I think it could be my connectivity. Good morning to everyone. I also would like to have a special welcome to the Deputy Minister. Thank you for being part of the of this discussion. And also would like to also extend gratitude to the department for the presentation. Mine is going to be very short. I think most of the issues have been covered by the other members who spoke before me. I think, what I've seen and what I've heard from the ministerial task team are issues that we are very much aware of. And the only problem is that despite the fact that the different departments have brought, including this department, has brought them into the fore, they haven't been really dealt with. I think for me, particularly if it comes to the issue of basic education, if the ministerial task team comes and says, in the issue of ECD and ensuring that primary education is at par with higher education to make sure that we eventually get students or graduates that can be able to be part of science, technology, and innovation, which will in turn inform the policy implementation by the government. It's very important. And the ECD has always been an issue that everybody felt that it needs to be looked at in a manner that will ensure that the learners that come from the ECD set up, and also the primary and higher, I'm talking about secondary schools, which is like higher education schools, that they are able to be part of specifically research. They obtain the type of results that will enable them to be part of research, and that goes back to what we've been talking about, Chair, which is the math and science. And if we are not able to ensure that our learners are having the type of quality teachers, this goes to another recommendation that has come also into the fore, which is the issue of teachers, that we don't have necessarily the right type of teachers in our basic education who will eventually ensure that we get the right learners that can be able to proceed to higher education and be able to contribute eventually to our economy. So I think those are, despite the fact that, I appreciate the fact that they've been raised and there's a recommendation, but I think there's kind of a slow pace coming from the government to ensuring that not only we have to have a ministerial task team coming making this kind of recommendations, that the departments themselves who are affected by this can actually pull their ropes and make sure that we we are actually in power. And I think that's why, you know, as a party, as a DA, we always believe that, you know, both basic and higher education, they have to be one ministry, because that can bring a little of synchronizing, because no other basic education will not be left behind. Because if the mandate of higher education is to ensure that we have, you know, we bring innovation and our economy really rely on ensuring that our students, whoever that leave, you know, the universities, they're equipped to contribute to the economy eventually. So I think that's something that I just wanted to bring in. And the other issue that I feel like the ministerial teams, they're not talking about is the budgeting. Because as much as we want to say that, you know, these are the recommendations and this is what needs to be achieved, but if none of those recommendations are followed by budgets, then we cannot, you know, realize those recommendations. They'll be just, you know, talks whereby, you know, they cannot be implemented. As you all know, without a budget, without the proper budget, we cannot actually implement any of those recommendations. And if you also look at the black institutions, university, the one previously referred to as black institutions, the reason why they are unable to realize the idea of science and innovation and research is primarily because, you know, their budget is very negligible. If we have to compare with universities of Stellenbosch, UCT, and West University, they don't seem to be, they actually don't get enough, you know, budget for them to actually think and, you know, think beyond what they are used to, which is teaching and learning. And, which, you know, as we all know, that most of them, they are known for just, you know, teaching and learning, not necessarily doing any research. So that culture of research, research as well, as much as something that we need to realize, it must also be coupled with budgeting to say, we need, you know, to be you know, you to be aligned with certain type of research, and also that is something that I felt that I don't know if I missed when I was reading the report. The other issue is that, you know, aligning, making sure that certain universities are aligned with certain type of research, because it's of no use to be all over the place whereby you don't have a more niche that you look at to say, as a university, this is what we are going to be known for, and this is what we're going to be focusing for, and our funding will be attracted, whether it's from the private sector or even from the department itself, that it is focused into a certain area, so that, you know, students, they know that if they intend to go to a particular university and their intention is to study into a certain faculty, that it is there, it is funded, and it's got quality lectures that can be able to make sure that they go through their curriculum and also complete their degrees. What I liked about one of the recommendations was the recommendation of having, you know, short courses. I think that is something that, you know, many universities across the world are looking at, to saying that, you know, we need to ensure that we have courses that are very direct, that actually speak to the needs of students, and also they speak directly to the needs of what is out there in the economy and the job market. So I think it's something that, you know, we really have to look at. But I would have liked, you know, to see, you know, step by step on how should we be able to do that and what has been done currently. Because this report came out in 2019, and I think the minister has been aware. I know the wheels of the government are a little bit slow, but I think that is something that you really have to look at. Because if you want to do a certain course, and you'll have to do numerous courses that are really not related to what you want to intend to do, but short courses are more direct. They really speak to what, as I said, you know, they speak to the job market and what is needed. And students can be able to come in and leave within, you know, a year equipped, or you know, even a year and a half equipped, and be able to go and enter the job market, and as well as be able to be entrepreneurs at the same time. The other issue, you know, that I have to say is the issue of transformation, particularly the issue of gender within universities. You'll find that, you know, as Dr. Kumal has said, that, you know, there are, you know, workshops. I mean, I've seen that as well. There are workshops against, you know, issues regarding racism, sexism, and so forth. But actually, the impact is not there. So I think it is, I would just like to just add on that to say, really, we need to be able to have more steps and ensure that whatever that is being implemented, it has real impact. It cannot be just something that we always talk about, and it is not, it doesn't have an impact, and we are not seeing any results. And we are seeing that you know, the issue of sexism, we are seeing it throughout various universities, and it is an issue throughout. And if even different institutions, you know, have this kind of issues. The other issue that I also just the last one, Chair. I'm not going to take much of your time now. The other one is, you know, having as well studied at the University of Free State in science, I had a, you know, when you are there, like, you know, you find that you have students that have intentions to do masters and do PhD, but then you'll find that the funding is a problem, because you won't have enough funding that will actually keep you within the institution. And what happens there thereafter is that the student starts looking outside to say, what is there? Where, you know, can the job market give me something better than, you know, what the university is giving me? So, you know, there's a lot of scouting. So once you've done your, you know, your honors, I'm talking about myself, this is my master's, and scouting happens all the time, because if you look at what is out there compared to what the university is giving you, I personally had to pay for my master's, first of all, at the University of Free State. So when, you know, a prospective employer comes and says, well, I can give you, you know, a salary and a job, and in a climate whereby there's very high unemployment, and the reason why, you know, some people they stay and do masters and PhD is primarily because, you know, they can't find work. And once you have, you know, a company scouting students from, you know, universities, then it becomes very attractive for them to leave and to go into the job market, because they know that if that window opens and closes and you don't take advantage of it, you won't be able to basically, you know, get it at you know, when once you have master's or PhD. So I think that is something that we have to look at, the funding of students. We have to look at that to say, how do we ensure that we retain students that want to do a master's degree, that want to do a PhD degree? Because if we don't, especially in science, if we don't do that, then, you know, scouting becomes very easy, and that will actually deter them from staying in an institution to complete their studies. So I think that's something that we have to look at, and I think I didn't see any recommendations on that to say, you know, how do we actually make sure that we retain our, you know, master's and PhD students, so that we can actually be able to realize the targets that we have in increasing those graduates. Thank you, Chair. I hope I was not too long.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makesi. Honorable Mashati.
Thank you very much, Chair. And good morning to colleagues. And special greetings to DM and the department. As Lalo, I wouldn't take too long. My focus will be on the 4IR and the UNISA report. One, Chair, the purpose of the MTT was to investigate the capacity of the PISA system with those four key areas, including the contribution to the 4IR in as far as research and innovation is concerned. In this instance, when one looks at the presentation, which one would want to believe it's high level presentation, it would be prudent that we get this particular report because I want to believe the presentation is a summarized version of the report, because part of the issues that one would want to speak to is the contribution by the department to institutions of higher learning. In as far as research and innovation is concerned, one of the key issues is how much is being contributed to this institution, with much more focus on research. Because when you look at different institutions, they have now developed what we call the third streams or the subsidiaries of institutions, where they use the same research that has been acquired through resources that have been given to institutions by the department to really work towards innovation and create and research in different universities. But what becomes important is how much has been used and has what kind of innovation has they been able to bring to the fore, and how is it contributing to youth unemployment and so forth and so on. That particular space the report does not speak to. So it will be prudent that we get the report and to check in terms of all these other elements that might have been lacking. Number two, Slalo, is on the finding, the NSFAS. Where government does well, I think it is important that we give gratitude to the work done. And where they fail, as a portfolio committee, we've got all the right and responsibility to be able to hold them accountable. But in as far as NSFAS has done, I think it is important that we, as a portfolio committee, appreciate the hard work that this new board and the new administration is trying to do in turning around things at NSFAS. We do appreciate the fact that in terms of the funding guidelines, there was some form of consultation that was done, and that challenges relating to previous years, they are now becoming a thing of the past. Although each and every system, it will not be 100% perfect. There will be challenges. And it's important that as we move forward, we try to improve our system so that much more can be achieved in as far as having a system that is operational, that is operating optimally in ensuring that students do not have severe challenges. As Carlo, in as far as the recruitment, retention, and the progression of Black academics, I think part of one of the recommendations speaks about remuneration. And I think Honorable Machese has also made reference to that. But it would be important to also, like what Comrade Honorable Ndombi has indicated, and Honorable Khumalo, that let's get the entire report, because these recommendations are informed by specific observations to say, in as far as the remuneration of academics, our lecturers, inclusive of junior lecturers, how is the department or institutions of higher learning looking into it, so that you give at least some form of encouragement for people to remain within the system, and that we don't only have numbers, we don't only have people who are looking for jobs, but we are having people with quality expertise that will actually continue to improve the quality of our education system, especially at high education. Carlo, on the issue of UNISA, I think it is important that we acknowledge that government or the country has a serious challenge of access into the higher education space. And this is informed by the number of institutions we have and the capacity of these institutions to accommodate the number of young people who have just matriculated in 2021. Now, with UNISA being the biggest institution that can accommodate students, it is important that this institution becomes operational. UNISA has to work, colleagues, and it just has to work. It can't fall apart. because it becomes the one of the institutions that will definitely assist in ensuring that many young people get accommodated in high institutions, in institutions of higher learning. I'm saying this thing primarily because, Tlalo, in the world, remote learning is becoming something of today and of tomorrow. And for UNISA to be able to function optimally, effectively and efficiently, it gives us hope that many other institutions will be able to operate in the same fashion in order to allow many young people to be able to have access to higher education. So in as far as the recommendations are concerned, we really need to make sure that it becomes a functioning institution, because it will give hope to other young people to be able to access higher education. But what becomes much more important is that UNISA must not be reduced to an institution that just accommodates those who have not made it in other institutions. And it would be wrong to give it that, that code, you know, I don't know, you know, English sometimes when you want to deal with these things that are related to socioeconomic issues. Now, it is important that this institution becomes operational. It becomes important that it functions. Therefore, there must be clear timelines in terms of how the issues that have been raised in the report are going to be addressed in making sure that the management, because DG clearly says to us, there are chronic managerial issues at this particular institution. Therefore, it is important that we become specific in terms of these are the critical matters that need to be that have been highlighted as issues that needs to be addressed, and how do we begin to address them with the timelines like Honorable Kumalo has indicated. We need to put timelines to say how then do we deal with these matters. But what becomes also key, Slalo, we must bear with you that this portfolio committee has a number of issues that needs to deal with. And to a large extent, we will not be able to deal with issues individually in different portfolio committees because of the time constraints that we have. For us to have a clustered arrangement in as far as the presentations were done today, it is informed by the fact that we would want to accommodate all issues. However, challenges of time limitations are reality. Therefore, honorable members, honorable King, I think we must just give it our thought that we don't have enough time, but we would want to get everything going, though it will sometimes marginalize issues. It will also compromise issues of quality of the work that we do. But in our best of our ability, let's try to be accommodative and be supportive to the chair in making sure that we get all this presentation going through. Thank you very much, Lan.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mahlatsi. Honorable Kumalo, is there anything you would have, perhaps that members have not covered that you'd still like to raise?
Thanks, Chair. I actually didn't think I'd get an opportunity, so I need to go back to my notes that I made. Otherwise, you can have the department respond and maybe an opportunity for follow-up. I'm just actually scrolling through my documents to try my questions. I don't think you'd give me a chance to air my observations. Thanks, Chair.
Right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, honorable members. We've not heard from the gentleman in the committee. We believe in gender representation. Honorable Boshoff, honorable Litsiye, honorable Yabo have been quiet today, but nonetheless, is our Koba as amakhosikazi. I think from my side, perhaps, let me start off where the work may have concluded. To say, colleagues, part of the greatest frustrations we've had since the reshuffle of cabinet by President in August last year is that there's also been some portfolios that have been split, and this has really created a challenge in the programming of committees. And so ideally, we would have sat. In fact, when we started the term, the Sixth Administration, we sat on Wednesdays and Fridays. However, noting the copious amount of work that we have to do in this particular portfolio, considering that we have two departments that account to us, considering that we have one department that has many institutions of higher learning, both universities, the many TVETs we have, the CETAs and the entities, and the CETs, we started to appeal for a third day in the week. So in fact, we used to sit on three occasions in a week. We'd sit on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, considering the amount of work that we need to do. Also considering the fact that we do tend to, and I don't want to use this word, but we perhaps don't do justice to the Department of Science and Innovation. We don't do justice to TVETs. We don't do justice to CETs. We don't do justice to the CETA program. So it is unfortunate, colleagues, that we find ourselves having the amount of work that we have to do with the limited amount of time that we have. And this is something we continue to raise with the Chair of Chairs to say that, you know, we are finding it very difficult for us to do our work. And we often feel as though we're just scraping the surface. Because I think all of us, colleagues, I mean, noting the frustration that colleagues have articulated today, I think all of us are committed to wanting to see fundamental change in the sectors we are responsible for. So for us, I know, colleagues, it feels as though, you know, we are merely just scraping the surface, and it's a concern that we have. And that is why we then want to further encourage members of this committee to do their constituency work and assist the work of the portfolio committee. Honorable King, I know yourself, Honorable Makesi, Honorable Boshoff, you in the Northern Cape, you colleagues go on the ground and they go and hold institutions accountable. And this is part and parcel of assisting the committee with its oversight work, because this portfolio committee is not the only space of which we are able to hold public institutions accountable. And so, you know, we do agree, colleagues, that, you know, in the case of which now we've had these four MTT reports presented to us, we may not have done fundamental justice to them. And so what I would then appreciate, though, is that we have been able to receive a high level understanding of what is currently taking place or in relation to these ministerial task teams. And then also perhaps request from DG's office, as Honorable King may have alluded to, and I think this is something I already thought of when Honorable Khumalo was speaking, to say that she'd like to understand how we then get to these recommendations, is for perhaps these reports to be sent to the committee, the ones, of course, that are ready for public sharing, for them to be sent to the committee for members to indulge. And then at a later stage, colleagues, we will then bring back the department on each one of these matters, because also colleagues must be able to appreciate how the intersection of the reports we may have received, right? So, for example, DG, you know, as we speak about, or as we look at the MTT on the progression of Black academics and institutions of higher learning, for me, I immediately think of the work we did last week. What was the day? Was it Wednesday or Thursday? Tandy, when did we go to Stellenbosch? I can't even remember now. I think it was Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
When we went to Stellenbosch on Wednesday, already I'm thinking to myself, what is the buy-in of institutions of higher learning with regards to the recommendations of that particular report or that MTT? And whether or not, you know, considering the challenges we have around institutional autonomy, and that's the very same reason why we want to have a colloquium on institutional autonomy. But I guess, you know, are these recommendations mandatory to the sector or not? And because ultimately, if we're going to do, you know, this important work that the entity has done, bring forth these, make the observations we've made on the sector, so we've diagnosed the challenges that we have, and then we bring forth these recommendations, but there's no commitment to implementing these recommendations, then we will continue to have the challenges that we have in the sector. So I think for me, implementation is hard to achieve, but you know, will we be able to see fruition in relation to the implementation of these recommendations? And then, of course, for me, where there's an interface again between the Department of Higher Education and the Department of Science and Innovation is on the matter around funding and funding for postgraduate studies, and linking it directly to the commitment by within the DSI's within the DSI in relation to funding for postgraduate studies for Black women academics, in trying to change the makeup of academics in institutions of higher learning. But also then that then speaks directly to the interface around budget to say we therefore cannot have the type of reprioritization of the DSI's budget if we want to see the fundamental change that we want to see in the makeup of Black academics and institutions of higher learning. So then if I were to just go back to UNISA, DG, the presentation notes, I guess, and the observations made that there's a great amount of educators that come out of the UNISA and for me that is extremely worrying as I make a direct linkage to the fourth industrial revolution and us hoping that DBE, because I want us to be honest, DG, and maybe colleagues who sit in the portfolio committee on basic education can assist us in having an honest reflection on whether or not we are making the type of strides we want to see in basic education in equipping a foundation, our young people with a foundation to be able to then harness their skills to prepare them for the fourth industrial revolution as they progress into institutions of higher learning. So I want to then take it back to UNISA to say, As a graduate of UNISA in a postgraduate certificate in education, can speak from experience that curriculum is very worrying. And for me, if the bulk of our educators are receiving that curriculum in their training to go and educate our young people, and they're supposed to have the necessary skills to be able to equip equip other young people with the skills to be able to be a viable participants in the fourth industrial, it's an ecosystem that is collapsing. We're going to have a fundamental crisis. It's just not going to work. Because yes, the curriculum is weak. Two, the curriculum is outdated. Three, the curriculum, in terms of assessment, is absolutely flawed. In terms of plagiarism, in terms of the legitimacy of the student at UNISA's work, there's just a lot that one has seen herself and is very concerned about. And the type of even, just observing how students in that space interact, the ethics of individual students within those institutions, very concerning. So for me, DG, I have a concern and that I think we need to continue to observe as a department, very closely in terms of the quality of teaching and learning that takes place at that particular institution. And I guess that's what informed that particular ministerial task team as well. I also want to perhaps really implore on the department to make an analysis on whether or not we need to continue expanding UNISA and whether or not that's a viable, that's the best alternative, or perhaps investing more into creating more institutions for decentralizing. And I really am not sure where, I'm saying this is a question that we're throwing at the department to lead us in those type of thoughts, right? So do we expand an institution like UNISA? I mean, when you speak about, when the presentation speaks about minister referring to a mission drift, part of that mission drift where we see UNISA becoming quite a contact institution is because of its failures in terms of its online accessibility. If I can't get you on a phone, I'm going to want to physically come to the institution. If I can't have a viable interaction with my lecturer online or digitally, I'm going to want to walk to the institution or come to the institution so that I can receive the type of support the academic support that I want. So there's just a lot of crisis even there in itself. And I think, we need to really zoom into UNISA, and as we build more institutions of higher learning, as we want to increase like University and Mpumalanga University, and we want to, you know, and we build the institutions we're going to be building in Ekurhuleni, we need to, as we're considering modes of teaching and learning on whether or not it's hybrid or the hybrid component of these institutions coming out of COVID as well, there may be lessons that we may have learned, but we need to strongly consider what then works best, and how do we learn from UNISA where they've perhaps of course succeeded, but also where they have been shortfalls. But I also then want to ask DG that as we look into the MTT on 4IR, that we try and make linkages with some of the other work that we're doing. So, I mean, last year, 2021, we had the Skills Conference. What was the interface there between that Skills Conference and what the MTT on the 4IR is doing in relation to skills needed to advance the fourth industrial revolution? As we move into the CET summit that's coming up this coming week, we need to be able to see how we then strengthen the CET sector for it to also be a driver of the fourth industrial revolution and the skills needed in relation to that. So I think I'll just leave it at that for now, DG, and allow for yourselves to respond, and hopefully members have been covered.
Chair?
Yes, Honorable Makesi.
I'm sorry to interrupt your program. I just wanted to, there's something that I forgot to mention, and I think there's something that we need to really consider and maybe discuss as a committee. I think there's a lot of
I would assume that you are asking if you can continue, proceed.
Oh yes, can I proceed? It's just one thing that I was thinking that, like, you know, we need to consider that was brought by the, you know, the commission today. Okay, thanks. I know earlier I was not very clear, but I hope, you know, whatever that I wanted to say was captured. But one thing that I believe that we have to really look at, because it is something that has been thrown around now and then, specifically when we come across institutions that that have chronic issues, you know, problems that we are saying that, you know, they have to be put under administration. I think that's something that we need to revisit, because, you know, putting all these institutions, you're talking about, you know, CUT, you're talking about VAL, you're talking about UNISA, you know, and so forth. You know, I kind of have a problem with that, but I think it's something that we need to discuss as a committee to say, do we actually think that this is the way to, you know, to deal with this kind of institution? Or are we allowing them to, you know, their problems to simmer for such a long time that we end up finding ourselves in a situation where we say now, you know, we have to, you know, bring, you know, administrators to come and take over the institution. So I think that's something that, you know, I find it to be a bit of a dangerous position that the department is taking in this case, because that means most of our institutions, especially the former Black universities, institution, they are the ones who are finding themselves under this situation, and the problems that they encounter, they are very similar, and they are mainly is because the main issue is because, you know, we are not dealing with the issues as they come. We allow them to go on for long, and we don't deal with them as soon as we should be. So I think it's something that we have to think of, because, like, you know, I wouldn't like to see more and more institutions being under administration, because that compromises the teaching and learning and also, you know, the administration and management of the institution. That's something that I just wanted to add on, and I forgot to mention earlier. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Makesi. Perhaps also just one last clarity from my side, PG, in relation to time frames for the UNISA MTT, when we can expect, I think you had alluded to the fact that Minister will have to meet with Council again, and then there'll be outcomes from there. And when can we expect that to then happen in terms of timeframes? If I heard correctly, DG, I have also noted, colleague, that DM Manamela would have requested to leave us earlier. DM, if you would want to make an input before I hand over to DG, that's more than welcome. If not, you can then conclude after DG has spoken. Okay, I think DM has already left us, so I'll hand over to you, DG.
Chairperson of the committee, once again, thank you very much for your guidance and leadership in the conversation, as well as the whip, Honorable Mahlatsi and other honorable members who have spoken. I think already when you set up a committee of eminent persons and experts and truly esteemed individuals like those that we have appointed to lead the ministerial task teams, when their voice is heard and they express their views, it becomes sobering. And it's really something that is important to us that we have these reports now at our disposal as instruments to really, really sharply engage the environment, and change, the status quo. So I think I needed to make that comment. And secondly, Chair, you make an observation that the report that we have tabled, the key issue around them is implementation of the reports, and I think we note this, and you also insisted as well as Honorable Mashati, that time frames to address the issues must be identified. If I may start with the UNISA report, we are very clear that within the next couple of weeks, 1 or 2 weeks, we must have secured engagement with the council at UNISA to make sure that the engagement begins, so that we go to cabinet with agency, to deal with these matters. Clearly, the minister is taking these reports quite seriously, Honorable Mahetsi, but it doesn't mean that we already have taken decisions around the recommendations that are being made. The minister has received the report, is sharing it with the committee, but further, We there are certain rules that need to be followed. We have to recognize the role of council in at UNISA in this regard, and we will, notwithstanding the fact that there are reports that already the report was leaked, but we must follow the process of ensuring that this is done. Understandably, Chair, I think we must also, I think it's important to be honest as well. I think COVID did interfere with the quick turnaround since the reports have been finalized, and perhaps even our own administrative issues. might have undermined this. So there's now an urgency in trying to get the reports processed and the implementation process to begin. The recommendations across the board are clear. I wish to draw at this point in time Dr. Lewin to make a few remarks, and I will also draw Trudy van Beek to make comments on around open learning systems so that it speaks to the issue of the 4IR. And then with your permission, I will conclude on that chairperson, if I may.
Thanks, DG. Colleagues may continue.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, DG, and good morning to you, Chair, and honourable members. And thank you for this opportunity to respond on some very complex issues. And Chair, I think, you know, to align with the point that you made, I think it's important that we have these engagements, but I think, and I'll definitely answer some of the questions. I think that it would be really important that, you know, we can, I guess, look at, and of course, it is, you know, the time of the committee is very constrained, as you say, but it will be very important for us to sort of identify where further discussion is needed. I mean, some of these topics, even subtopics within the MTT reports, are themselves, you know, the subject of a long, a potentially quite long and important discussion. And maybe I can identify some of those areas. The issue, for example, of teacher education, and not only UNISA's role in teacher education, but what work the department is doing in partnership with the university system, with the education deans, and with the Department of Basic Education. I think that in itself is a really important topic, and members have raised a real plethora of issues around teacher education and the pathways between school and post-school education that I think that we could address. And maybe just while I'm on that topic, to say that the department does work very closely with DBE. We do have in the university branch a directorate that looks at teacher education and also looks at teacher education for the post-school system, as well as for early childhood development, as well as for basic education. And there's been quite a big project funded by the European Union over the past few years, which has also, in fact, part of that project, and Trudy might talk about it, has been on issues of technology and education and, for example, in the area of the development of the National Open Learning System, but also a lot of work on the capacity development in the teacher education sector in a whole range of areas. And I think it would be a wonderful opportunity, if there is one, for us to focus on that at some point, perhaps, as you say, Chair, in collaboration with the Basic Education Committee. In terms of some of the questions that were raised, Chair, I will try and give some high-level answers. Maybe just a point, and I think the DG makes this point. A lot of what we've presented today primarily are recommendations of ministerial task teams, and as DG has indicated, made by some, you know, very, very prominent members of the system and very knowledgeable individuals. Those are recommendations, and they don't necessarily reflect the decisions that the minister may ultimately end up taking, or the decisions of the department. And maybe I can just speak specifically around that with regards to UNISA. The minister, as you know, is applying his mind on that report. The very important thing for the minister and the department is that we are guided by the Higher Education Act, and the Act guides the way in which we engage with institutions. It guides how we what decisions need to be taken. It guides how the minister and when the minister can intervene in an institution, and what kinds of processes need to be looked at if that should be done. And so, as much as the task team may have made a specific recommendation, that doesn't necessarily result, for example, in the minister deciding to put an institution under administration. In fact, I've been in a number of meetings where the minister has said quite clearly that it's not a decision that is taken lightly at all. And certainly this, the Act guides us, and it's unlikely that, you know, a decision like that is taken without some very serious discussion. And as DG has indicated, the discussion with both the MTT and with the Council of UNISA is very critical before any decisions would be taken. So I think that just recommendations that are presented are not necessarily the view of the department. I'll take that theme forward, Chair, in discussing maybe just one or two issues relating to the task team on Black academics, and maybe just to point out that the task team report is available on the department's website. And so the work that the MTT did, and the particularly in drawing together the knowledge that we have in the system about these issues. And there are very, very broad sets of issues around postgraduate training, around transformation of institutional cultures, around the pipeline for young academics, around issues of marginalization in academia, and maybe also to make the point that as much as South Africa has very, very specific challenges due to the inequalities and challenges of our past political regime and how that impacted on higher education, a lot of these issues are actually global issues, and particularly in terms of how margin groups of people that have been marginalized from higher education, including women, are incorporated into higher education, and how equity is achieved and equality is achieved for marginalized groups. And this is a global issue. There's a lot of work being done on it, but certainly South Africa has very specific challenges related to the discriminatory past that impacted quite significantly on our institutions. But I do want to say that in relation to the Black Academics Report, there's actually this is an issue that has been has grasped us for significantly over the last 10 years or so. And if you look back at the policy discussions and the work that's been done in the sector, you'll see a number of reports reflecting on some of these issues. What the MTT report does very substantially and quite helpfully is to bring some of those things together. But I think if we were to go through each one of the recommendations, I could give you examples of areas where substantive work is taking place. Particularly, for example, in the department, we have, as you know, the Staffing South Africa's Universities Program, which has been in place since 2018 as part of the University Capacity Development Program, as part of the UCDP, which, as you know, is an earmarked grant to the system in the region of about R1 billion per annum. That we have a number of projects in there that are dealing with the staffing pipeline in higher education. You will know about some of them, Chair, the NGAP, et cetera. And maybe at some point, Chair, this is an area that it would be useful to us to present for us to present in more detail on. I also think that what's critical about the MTT report is that what we are working on is working very closely with DSI. As many of the members have correctly pointed out, there are very strong overlaps with the work that DSI and the NRF do in the development of research and innovation. And we're working very closely with them in terms of how we should respond more systematically to some of these recommendations. Also, Chair, and USAF is an important partner in these discussions, as well as the institutions, because a lot of work is happening at institutional level. That is not to say that the MTT report doesn't point out where there's a lot more that needs to be done and where we need to put our attention much more closely. But certainly there's a great deal going on if you look at the work happening through the SARCI Chairs program, for example, if you look at the work we're doing through this Staffing South Africa's Universities program, et cetera. So I think that it's very important. I think there were specific questions that Honourable Dr. Khumalo had raised, and I think there's some really helpful questions there also to focus us. The issue around employment equity plans, I think the recommendation more specifically is sort of focusing on what are the Department of Education and Labour and the Department of Higher Education and Training doing together to look at how the employment equity plans of institutions are being are being looked at. And I think this is an important partnership we need to think about going forward. Also, USAF is engaged through their research and innovation strategy group quite significantly on this issue in terms of what we can do nationally. Some of the issues, for example, around mentoring, national mentoring networks, et cetera, are already, there are plans underway around that. Obviously, we also have the PhD targets and the work that we're doing to support that. Every single university, I would say without any hesitation, has a plan around these issues, around postgraduate studies, around enrollments in postgraduate studies, around the pipelines for academic staff. And the question really that we are confronting right now in collaboration with USAF and DSI and others is how do we monitor that more closely? And then perhaps just to answer some of the other questions as well, that means that we also, you know, we need to look at plans, and I think that we could quite comfortably come and present some of those more closely. There was a specific question about the Transformation Oversight Committee, and maybe, and this is also, you know, there has been a delay in us talking about this report. The report was finalized in 2020, and quite a lot of the work I'm talking about now is underway currently in engaging with the system, and particularly in us working very closely with DSI on a plan for implementation that picks up on some of the work that I've been talking about. But in relation to that, the Transformation Oversight Committee term of office came to an end in 2020. The minister has been engaging with the Council on Higher Education in terms of how the mandate around monitoring transformation in institutions can be taken up by the CHE. There's a role that the department plays in how it monitors institutions, and there's also a very important role that the CHE plays, both in terms of its advisory capacity in the Act, as well as the way in which it monitors the system on quality issues. And so there's quite a significant discussion going on there. But essentially, the TOC is no longer currently an active committee. Quite rightly so, you know, a lot of the members of the committee know institutions quite well, and some have worked in institutions. So some of the issues that are being raised are critical, but a lot of them are institution specific. Not to say that there aren't issues that we can't address at a national level, which includes, for example, looking at what the conditions are for early career academics, for academic staff, how issues of the NRF rating system and the promotion criteria at institutions can be addressed. Very important issue was raised about PhDs and whether, for example, in UOTs, in specific technical areas whether there's a need for all staff to have PhDs. Those are certainly issues we're looking at. The other issue that many universities are undertaking very serious work on is the progression criteria for academics who focus predominantly and primarily on their teaching careers. And so there is quite a lot of work going on in the system about this, and perhaps this is something else we need to come and talk more specifically on and go deeper into some of those areas. Chair, I'm trying to rush through all my notes because there were a lot of really big discussions.
Perhaps we can alleviate you by also requesting that some of the in-detail responses, and I think many of them may have come from Honourable Khumalo, and I think she may still have other clarities that she, you know, seeks. And maybe what we can then facilitate is that the questions that Honourable Khumalo may have not have managed to bring forth, can she submit those in writing to the Secretariat, Anele, for him to submit to yourselves? And then if you could also, in detail, and I mean, I think a lot of it is also recommendations, right, that were coming forth. Can those also then be responded to in writing so that we capture the detailed responses and you're not just trying to rush through it and not do justice to the response? Thanks,
Dr. Lewis. Thank you. Can I just make two more points before? Just then on referring to the NSFAS, particularly to the NSFAS report and the UNISA report. The UNISA report, just very importantly, the scope of the report is very different. I mean, I think the MTT ended up, you know, making a number of findings on governance and management issues, and those must be taken up by the department, and how that is done, obviously, I've talked to that. But the scope of the review was really a strategic review of UNISA. And so the strategic questions that you, Chair, have also raised around UNISA in terms of what our thinking around distance education and how to grow enrollments in the system, those are some of the key issues that we really need to focus on. And so I think that the struggle is that the scope of the report was not, it wasn't an independent assessment of UNISA, for example. So some of the more forensic issues that get raised through that, those are issues that, you know, still perhaps need to be looked into. But the scope of the report was very much about, you know, what kind of role should UNISA as an institution be playing? And Chair, I wanted to make a similar point about the NISFAS Ministerial Committee of Inquiry report, because a lot of the questions that have been discussed in this portfolio committee around NISFAS, and rightly so because of the necessary oversight role that the committee plays, are very specifically about the governance and management of NISFAS over the period of administration and in the current period. And the NISFAS MCI was really about trying to understand how NIS, what it was that led to NISFAS having to be put under administration in the first place. What were those underlying organizational causes? And so a lot of the recommendations are at quite a high level. And thankfully, we've been able to give some of the responses. You can see that a lot of the work is ongoing. But very importantly for the department, a lot of the recommendations that were made to the minister and to the department require us to complete the policy review process that we're doing, because a lot of the reasons why we haven't, for example, bedded down changes to the Act or to the policy are precisely because of the recommendation that we need policy stability. And as you know, Chair, a lot of that policy stability is linked to the funding that is available to support the fully subsidized policy that came in from 2018. So I just wanted to make that point, and that's the frustration. The scope of the review was also very much about, you know, looking at the kind of long-term positioning of NISFAS, which is certainly to a certain extent dependent on the work that we currently engaged in now. Chair, I will absolutely, we can follow your suggested process on the other issues, but thank you for this opportunity to engage on these reports, because it really does give you a sense of the scope of the work that is taking place in the sector, as well as, you know, the work that the department does, and just how much on the one level there's a lot to be done, but also how much there is quite exciting work already underway. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lewin. DG, I've taken over from you. I'm sorry. I think you said there's one other colleague that ought to respond. DG, your mic is still off.
Trudy van Wyk, on the open learning system, Chairperson. Very briefly, I think you've already guided on how we're going to put together a written response and questions at to and fro, and I think that remains. We besides this chair, so that I don't also come back after that. Dr. Khumalo made an observation around the work process. I think it's important when we present such reports that we engage a little bit on that. I agree fully with Dr. Khumalo on it, that the work process that produced the recommendations and findings needs to be clarified so that we can actually see the circumstances that produce such recommendations, what kind of evidence informs it, and so forth. It's not enough just to say we appointed, trusted experts and professionals. We have to go through that. And in the report, you will see it. But in a presentation like a PowerPoint presentation, it becomes very difficult. But we will take care of that in our response as well. Trudy?
Thanks, DG. Honourable members, DG and colleagues, I'm going to respond very shortly in only 6 points to the to several questions and comments that were raised. And I think if we look at the recommendations from the Ministerial Task Team on the Fourth Industrial Revolution, it's around 3 issues. It is how does universities and TV colleges, how do they lead the R&D, the research and development? And I think there was a lot of comments made by that, by Honourable Malatsi and Honourable King, on the research and development. How do we lead as a sector with DSI in the Fourth Industrial Revolution? And then secondly is how do we embrace the Fourth Industrial Revolution in our teaching and learning, in our work that we're doing? And then lastly is how do we prepare students to function in a Fourth Industrial Revolution world? So around the 6 points that I want to raise, and Honourable King has started off with the question of what is the readiness of institutions? And I think we always think about infrastructure. And there's a lot of initiatives already happening in infrastructure, like the Student Laptop Initiative for NSFAS students, the infrastructure and the NSF projects and grants that are running at the moment. And we must acknowledge that most universities are extensively equipped to make use of Fourth IR technologies, and then that the TV colleges are progressively being equipped. And I must admit the role that the regional offices are playing in that, to really equip our TV colleges with the necessary infrastructure to function in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. But together with that, the infrastructure support and sharing that was raised is also very important, how we integrate CTAS and the industry into our work that we are doing and the infrastructure of the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And it's a whole day discussion on what is already being done on that. But secondly is the issue of connectivity, where we have our Sunring initiative with the DSI, the CSIR, and the Department of Communications and Digital Technology, as well as the TV College Connectivity Project, where we are providing broadband connectivity to all campuses and students and lecturers. But then the next issue is the data cost. And there, you know, we have already presented that is the zero rated. We can report that at the moment we have got 643 institutions in the PSET system. So that includes agricultural colleges, nursing colleges, private and public institutions, as well as DHET sites like NSFAS. We're talking of 1,100 sites that are zero rated. So if students or anybody access those sites, it is free of charge. We have got the data bundle initiative, as well as the that institutions are negotiating with mobile network operators. But I think the third point is for me very important, and it has been all raised also, is the readiness of lecturers and managers to embrace the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And COVID-19 has really given us the opportunity to embrace it. And I'm really worried about things that are being said at the moment. Can we get back to normal? And there will never be a normal, and I hope that we are not going back to normal, that we in all our institutions are embracing blended learning approaches, and that we look at policies, and that is one of our actions at the moment, is to look at options, at policies, like, for example, credit accumulation and transfer admission policies and so forth, where we're specifically looking at how we can accommodate blended learning approaches. The fourth point, and that was raised also again by Honourable King and others, Honourable Maseshi, where the curriculum and the content and the National Open Learning System for us at the department is a central mechanism and a vehicle to assist institutions, and especially TVET and CET, to provide free access to quality content, teaching and learning material. Although there are funding challenges for that at the moment, we have already done a lot of foundational courses, short courses, national occupational certificates, lecturer training materials that's already available and are extensively used. For example, the lecturer training has already been used by 5 universities at the moment. So with the curriculum, a lot of comments were made about the pipeline, about DBE, as about how does DBE support the PSET system in terms of the pipeline. And I want to report that DBE and DHET DGs at DG level, there is a bilateral that is meeting frequently to look at the interface and to look at where are those issues that we need to address. And DBE has already moved, as you know, to coding and technology subjects to promote and to support the fourth industrial revolution. There will always be an argument that DBE is not preparing students sufficiently. But I think there's a lot of arguments to be built for that and against that. But I think the 3-3 model is one of the initiatives from DBE to really prepare students for a broader scope. And I really want to thank Honorable Malatsi to address the unemployment, because we cannot take all students into universities or all students into TVET colleges, but that the 3-3 model is also diversifying students so that these are options for different learning pathways. I'm not going to say much about foundational learning. It's not only UCT that is taking it up. Most of the universities are preparing their students in some or other way. I know of the Free State, I know of the University of Pretoria and others that are preparing their first year students for access into university programs. And then the last, number 5, that I want to emphasize is the support, and it's both technical support as well as pedagogical support that has to be provided to institutions and by institutions. And again, the universities are well equipped. There are different forums that are supporting universities through this, and that the regional offices are playing a very pivotal role in supporting TVET colleges. Funding, I just want to say that the infrastructure grants are using extensively, and we are making use of National Skills Fund for funding most of these initiatives. So I think as a way forward, and I think the issue for us is the implementation of some of the recommendations. And I think Tandi very eloquently said it is a ministerial task team report. It is how do we engage with that? The minister will release that. The report is already on our website, and I have sent it also to DG's office to share with you already that this report must first be put in the public domain for public comment. So minister will ask a month-long public comments process. And then there's already a task team, a working group being established in the department between DHET and the Department of Science and Innovation, where we are working on a 3-month implementation plan by taking the public comments, incorporate that into the recommendations, incorporate that into the work that's currently being done. And we must admit, universities and colleges are really innovative and has got a lot of programs already focusing on, for example, artificial intelligence, the Internet of Things, and so forth, and that we can bring that all together and share and also support each other to an implementation plan that will be produced within 3 months. That was the directive of the minister. DG, Chairperson, thanks for that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think we present this other angle that shows work that's already being done, notwithstanding the fact that these reports still must go through the processes, some of them of public comments, and some of them through engaging councils, and some of them through going through cabinet processes. But already work is being done. But we're not arguing there's sufficient work that's been done. We merely are bringing the committee to our confidence to say Some work has been done. We've seen some progress in some areas, but clearly a lot of work still needs to be done. And I think we are committed to this chair, and working with you, we are confident that we will overcome. We submit, Chair, humbly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG, Dr. Lewin, Ms. Van Veit. Thank you very much for your responses. DG, I think firstly, I need to indicate that, and the Secretariat may assist me if I'm getting the details, if I'm mistaken, but the responses that we usually request that you send within 7 days, I don't think they're coming within 7 days. 7 working days, and I think that's a concern, because then ultimately we would want these responses on the spot, but because of the limitations we have in terms of time, and because we want you know, the facts and the full-on detail, we then allow for this process of the responses being sent back to us within 7 days. I'd really like to appeal to yourself, DG, that the responses do come back to the committee within the 7 days, the 7 working days. And also want to then indicate that in future, can we make sure that the presentation from the department and its entities arrives to the portfolio committee with sufficient time for members to be able to prepare adequately for the committee meeting. And then I'd like to then encourage, and this is really speaking from what Dr. Lewin said in terms of subtopics within these entity reports. I think I'd like to encourage that members of the portfolio committee, honorable members of the portfolio committee, do identify these subtopics within the entity reports that they could then take when we afford the opportunity for members to propose what we should add to the program of the committee, that perhaps they can lift some of the subtopics within the entity reports for us to engage on in a more comprehensive manner as the committee. I believe that there were a few members who took upon that opportunity. I think Honorable King, you did write to the PC when we asked that you do submit proposals on issues you'd like us to discuss, as well as, of course, Honorable Mashati and your collective as well, Honorable Borshoff, I think yourself as well. So colleagues, please, if there are subtopics that you think would be important for us to elaborate on more comprehensively as a committee coming out of these entity reports, let's do so. And then I'd like to, for us to, I think from a lot of what members have said, to appreciate that a lot of what is coming out of these entity reports does not exist in isolation. And therefore we need to see, see collaborative work between this department and other departments, like the Department of Science and Innovation and the Department of Basic Education, Department of Communications, amongst others. We also want to then receive ongoing updates, DG, on the fruits of these recommendations. And, you know, perhaps it may be a bit difficult because some of it, the legs of how far these recommendations must go, you know, it's really far. But we need to be able to track the work that we would have spent resources on. So we would appreciate, DG, if there's an ongoing monitoring and analysis by the department on some of the recommendations that may come out of these entities, and that if those that monitoring and evaluation can then be shared with the portfolio committee. And then we'd like to ensure that the full reports of these entities are then sent to members so that members can engage thoroughly. And then I just wanted to respond then to what, you know, I almost said honorable, to what Ms. Van Veek said in relation to the sentiment that is, you know, found in certain pockets of society where we speak about going back to normal. And it's very concerning considering the fact that we've had, and not only as this portfolio, but many portfolios, in the peak of COVID, there was a lot of articulation on lessons learned from COVID-19. And it would be fathoming if, or unfathoming rather, if we were not to then appreciate those lessons learned in rethinking much of how we then operate as a sector, but as society at large. And so I think we've forgotten that we once asked or we once analyzed lessons learned from COVID, and now we're just rushing to go to back to a supposed normal, when in fact we can't, you know, go back to a supposed normal, and there's a lot that we could learn from COVID-19. So I really wanted to appreciate what you said there, Ms. Van Beek. And then I'd also like to, I think there'd be a need for us, Anele, and this is a, you know, something we've spoken about a lot as a committee, but to have this joint meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. I think as the more work we do, the more, you know, it becomes very evident that we need to have a joint, you know, PC with DBE to try and find synergy on how we hold both our sectors accountable, considering the interface between the two, but also how we collectively take responsibility for the success of these two sectors as they are, you know, reliable on one another. Then in closing, DG, I think one of the main reasons why it was urgent for the Portfolio Committee to receive briefings on these ministerial task teams is because there's concern from citizens every time in government we speak about establishing a ministerial task team or a task team of any nature. And I think it's a valid concern. And so I think the only way we can alleviate any anxieties that may arise from citizens that we are incapable of doing the work that we're meant to do is by ensuring that these task teams conclude their work and that there are viable recommendations that come out of these task teams and that these recommendations are implemented. And so that is really is the take home, and it's a take home as well from the president's sort of a nation address to say citizens are at a point where they don't want us, they are sort of tired and fatigued by us continuously referring to going to fact find why, you know, X, Y, and Z challenges, but they would like for us to reach a point where we're truly implementing some of the recommendations that come out of the reports that, you know, these ministerial task teams produce. So really what becomes an important DG is for the job to be done and for the sector to enjoy the fruits of the work of these task teams. So having said that, DG, thank you very much to yourselves and your colleagues. I think for me, there were some questions that were not responded to. I think I asked on buy-in from institutions of higher learning and whether or not these recommendations become mandatory, specifically speaking to the one on the progression of Black academics. And there may be other questions that members might not have specific responses to. And I'd like for colleagues, when they then prepare the document they will send to us within the next 7 days, that they truly try and find those questions that they may have not adequately responded to, that members may have posed. So having said that, DG, again, thank you so much for your time. And we will be seeing you, I think, on Friday again, as we look at internationalization within the sector. I think that what informs that one in particular, DG, is the many concerns we receive from our students who are studying abroad, and how do we then, you know, remedy some of the challenges that may come from these international partnerships that we may then have, and how do we hold, you know, people who supposedly commit to funding these young people, and these young people leave their precious home country, and then they are not no longer supported, and what measures can the department put in place to protect these young people who merely just want to, you know, increase their knowledge and skills and be able to come and plow back in their motherland. So that will be on Friday, DG, and we look forward to seeing yourself and colleagues. Thank you very much. We will be going into the minutes now, DG, so you may excuse yourselves if you want. Thank you so much, DG.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, there we go. Thank you, DG. Colleagues, I would then like to propose perhaps a 5 minute comfort break, and then we'll return to engage the minutes that would have been sent to colleagues. So it's now 12:05. We'll return at 12:10 to adopt the minutes. Thank you.
Recording stopped.